once upon a time, there were two Hindu sages who lived high in the mountains. They lived a very ascetic life. They spent all of their days and all of their efforts in worshiping the god Vayu. And one day, as they sat down to eat their very sparse evening meal, they were approached by a beggar. And this beggar came up with his empty begging bowl, and he asked if they could share their evening meal with him. And the first sage said, "Well, no, we have very, very little. We have none to spare. You cannot have any of ours." And the beggar said, "Oh, I understand. I understand. You lead a very harsh life." And he said, "May I ask, which god do you worship?" And the sage said, "Well, we worship Vayu." "Oh, that is wonderful, the god of the wind. But tell me, is not Vayu also the god of the breath of life?" "Well, yes, it is. And is not Vayu present in all living things, all living things?" "Well, yes, it is." "Well, then, let me understand. If it's present in all living things, is not Vayu present in this humble beggar who comes before you?" "Well, of course." "Oh, so you are refusing to feed the god that you worship." And with that, the sages realized the error of their ways, and they were ashamed at their own ignorance, and they invited the beggar in, and they divided their meager portion in three instead of in two, and they had plenty to eat. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for coming out on this beautiful autumn day. I saw some little white stuff way back there on the...
No.
But it left. It left. It was only temporary termination dust. But thank you all for coming out today. And I really do appreciate you coming back. It's great to see you back, Adam. The title of my talk today is A Life of Choice. And our entire life, everything that we do is a choice. Now, some of our choices are pretty much automatic, and our life is on autopilot. We just keep making certain choices. Other choices are much more deliberate. And what I want to talk today about, the point that I really want to get through to everybody, is that we can enhance our lives. We can change what we do by making more conscious choices, by living a life of choice instead of allowing us to just float down the stream like a leaf down the mighty Susitna. We can have choice. When we go from autopilot to decision maker, we can create our hopes and our dreams, unlock our potential. We can approach life with a confidence and a courage and a poise instead of just floating down the mighty Sioux. Three major points today. I'm going to talk about making choices in alignment with your values and beliefs. Secondly, making a conscious decision to grow spiritually. And thirdly, to consciously choose to lead a life of generosity. First of all, making choices in alignment with your values and beliefs. If you believe in peace, then be a peacemaker wherever you go. It's like the song that we sing, you know, "Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me." And that's the only place that peace on earth is going to begin, is within each and every one of us. If you believe in love, then find ways to love the unlovable. The unlovable just represent those traits in ourselves that we have a hard time accepting. Years ago, our youth went to a teen camp, and when they came back, they had a phrase, and it was, what you're looking at, you're looking with. Boy, and that rang true. That which you see in others that bothers you, that is that little burr that you don't like about somebody, it's a trait that you have in you that you haven't healed yet. When we can accept those people as an embodiment of our own difficulties, we can then heal ourselves by loving them. Back in a previous life, when I worked at General Electric, I had a finance officer that was, he was a great guy. Felt like he was really part of my team. He always had your back. He understood the difficulty of sales. I mean, he was experienced, he was a veteran, just a great guy. And as so often happens, he got promoted and I lost him. And I was replaced by a young gal. And she was good. I mean, she was well educated. I think it was a heart, you know, an Ivy League school. She had a great education. But man, she'd never sat before a customer. She'd never been thrown out of an office. She'd never had a guy take your price and feed it to the Westinghouse guy. She had never been down that. And so when, you know, the rubber hit the road, when you're in the big sales meeting and they want to know what you're going to do, her answer was, oh, just increase sales. Like that was something really easy. Or, oh, we can solve that. Just increase our margins. Like, yeah, how am I going to get the guy to pay more for it when he can get it from my competitor cheaper than I already am? She never really got that, and she rubbed me wrong for years. All these years later, I realize the very thing that I didn't like about her, that rubbed me so wrong about her, was the very, very same thing that I was carrying around. I was this young upstart. I was going to sell this and I was going to do all of these great things. I had all these great plans. Just like her. All these years later, I can look and say that what I didn't like about her were the very things that I didn't like about myself. Pam the finance lady. The more we love throughout the course of a day, the more love sticks. It's easy to love in the lovely moments. It's easy to love when everything's going great. But those moments can fade. We can return to those moments when we find ourselves in the Pam moments. Eventually, we can find ourselves in a state of loving harmony with the world. So, continuing with this idea of making choices in alignment with our values and beliefs, if you believe in a world that works for everyone, then you have to start speaking out. Then you have to embody a world that works for everyone. Yes. We can visualize it. We can talk about it. We can think of all of the things that are necessary to create this type of a world. But until we can really embody a world that works for everyone, we can start speaking out for social justice and for those who are disenfranchised. We can envision a world that works for everyone. We can start by making small changes in how we interact with everyone. We can change our daily actions as well as the way we speak about those who are disenfranchised. If you believe that God is all there is, that this infinite being, this infinite intelligence, whatever it is, we call it God, if it is indeed all that there is, then we need to start treating each and every person as a god or goddess. Just like our Hindu sages. Vaya is in each. Once there was an order of monks that lived out in a forest. And the order had been declining for years and years and years. The Catholic religion wasn't appealing to people the way it did in earlier times. New young men coming in weren't coming to the Catholic Church. They were going elsewhere. And there were fewer and fewer recruits. And finally, they went for decades without any new recruits. And this order that had one time been flourishing was shrinking. At one time, they had vineyards that were known for their wonderful grapes. They had olive trees surrounding the vineyards, which gave them protection, and also wonderful olives, which they pressed into some of the most magnificent of oils. But things began to decay. And one day, the head of this order of monks went out into the forest to meditate. He had a hut out there that he would sometimes go to. And every once in a while, he would encounter a rabbi that came from the other side of the forest who also would go into that area to meditate and to think. And he happened to be out there one day and he encountered the rabbi. They began to talk and this monk unburdened himself. And he talked about the decline of the order and the things that they were facing and what was happening. And he asked the rabbi, "Do you have any wisdom? Do you have anything that you can share with me that we might be able to do?" And the rabbi said, "No, I don't." He said, I face a lot of those problems myself, and our orders are struggling in some ways too. I really don't have anything to offer you." And so the monk accepted that. And as they got ready to part, the rabbi said, "But there is one thing that I think you should be aware of." He said, "As I meditated, I came to the awareness that one of you is the Messiah." And the old monk was stunned. He said, "What do you mean?" "Yes, one of you is the Messiah." The monk went back to his order and he shared the story. He talked with the fellow monks about how he had had this meeting with the rabbi and how it was the rabbi's revelation that one of them was the Messiah. And the monks thought about it and they thought, "Well, maybe it's Father Tom. He's very religious. He's always versed in his prayers. He's always really good." And then, "No, it couldn't be one of us. That couldn't happen. That's not. We're a bunch of old geezers." "Well, maybe it's Father Wilhelm." "Oh, yes, he's very pious. The presence of the Lord is certainly in Father Wilhelm." "Maybe it's Francis. Maybe it's..." And so as they got to looking, they began to see the presence of God in one another. And one day, one of the monks was out and he got the opportunity. He started mowing an area that had formerly been a popular spot for people in the village to come out and have picnics. And he mowed the tall grass down and whatnot. And another one of the monks saw the picnic tables that they used to be out there. And he went out and sanded them and refinished them and just left them there. And sure enough, somebody from the village came by and they saw these new picnic tables and the mowed grass. And they came out for a picnic. And the next week, there were two or three families that came out. And the week after that, there were even more. And the weeks after that, people had to get there early in enough time before the football games. And people began to come to the to this area, and younger men started to come. And one day a young man came in and he asked about joining the order. And when he found out what they were about, he joined the order. And it had been the first new member they'd had for decades. And after one man joined, another came up and another young man joined. And before long, they had a new, whole new class of initiates. Maybe the Messiah was within each and every one of them. My second point is to make a conscious decision to grow spiritually. Have you been sitting on the sidelines of this center? Have you been waiting for life to come to you? It is only by making space for action and change will action and change impact your life. Reach out. Someone here will reach back. Tell us what you are passionate about. We'll find something meaningful for you. Take the time and step into these classes. If you haven't had Foundations, this is a great time to sign up for Foundations class. If you don't take Foundations, if you don't take the others, there are other opportunities, non-certificated classes. It's not just all about taking a bunch of classes and reading and doing homework. Ann's class is going to be a lot of fun. She's combined Deepak Chopra with Pam Grout and are going to be doing experiments to prove the metaphysical laws. Edwin Gaines, a famous Unity minister, highly quoted, when she graduated from Divinity School, the Unity Divinity School, she went out into the world and she was going to set the world on fire. She was a teacher and she was going to teach. And she got her flyers and she got out her publicity, and man, she promoted herself, and out it went, and she waited for the call to come and teach at a Unity Center somewhere. And it never came. And it never came. And she promoted and the call never came. So after months of this, she finally decided she needed to do something. So she sat down and she got quiet and she listened. And what came to her was to just go to the nearest Unity Center and see if they needed any help. And she walked in the door of the nearest center, went up to the minister, and she says, "Is there anything I could do to help around here?" And the minister says, "Well, yeah, you could clean. If you could come in and vacuum before service on Sunday, if you could spruce up the place a little, we'd really appreciate it." And so she began to vacuum and kind of clean and spruce up the place, and she cleaned the bathrooms, and, you know, she did a lot of that kind of stuff. And after a period of time, she felt a peace with that. It was really rewarding to her. It became very meditative to her to come in early on Sunday morning and to clean and straighten out the chairs. Where's David today? She did all those kinds of things, and it became very rewarding to her, these simple tasks. And then one morning, she got a call. She answered the phone, and it was, "Edwin, it's the minister. I have laryngitis. I can't talk today. You're going to have to teach the adult Sunday school and give the Sunday sermon." Click. And she was not ready for that. But she stepped up and she did it. But she did it now not from a place of promoting herself and putting herself into the world, but she did it from a place of love and being of service. And I think that's one of the things that propelled Edwin Gaines into being the shining light in the New Thought movement that she became. Emma Curtis Hopkins wrote, "If we feel that there is work to do, we may be certain we are the very ones to do it." Many, many times I have people come up to me and say, John, I know what we need to do. We should be doing this. And it's what they're really saying is, Don, what you should be doing is doing this. And that's great. But if you have that inspiration, you are the one to be doing it. Third point, consciously choose to live a life of generosity. And when you hear those words, when I hear them, what I think of first thing is money. Generous with our money, generous with our treasures and whatnot. And that's certainly an important part of it. And I'm not going to discount that or say that it's not important. But I'm saying it's not the only thing. Be generous in other ways. Be generous with yourself. What if the key to life isn't what you get, but it's what you give? You know, we live in this Western society. We live in this world where the winner is he who dies with the most toys. You know, and what if it's not about getting? What if it's not about the biggest house or the newest car or the most powerful four-wheelers? What if it's about giving? He who gives the most. What you give comes back to you in expanded and complete ways. It's two languages speaking the same meaning, but everything is reflected right back. In Spiritual Economics, Eric Butterworth wrote, life's inmost secret is the divine pattern in you, which can only really know when you are giving yourself in service. Life's inmost secret is the divine pattern in you, which you can only really know when you are giving yourself in service. When I went to college, I finished up my job the last day and I went home and I didn't have much. I threw my toothbrush and a spare set of underwear and my old 1957 Ford Fairlane and drove north. But before I left Denver, I took a detour and I went by my grandparents' house. And I don't know why I did that. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. And I went in and I just went in and say, Grandma and Grandpa, I just stopped by to say goodbye. I'm headed to college. And they really appreciated that. And they stopped and they talked for a while. And, you know, I didn't leave empty-handed. I left with a paper plate with saran wrap over the top with full of Grandma's oatmeal raisin cookies that just came out of the oven. But I didn't go there to get. I think that at some level I went there to give. And I went there to give my love, to let them know how much I appreciated them and what they had done for me in my life. And that's not something that I did at 17, but I did that day. And I've never forgotten that. And I have always felt really proud of that, because I think that in giving, I got a lot more than a plate of cookies. The conclusion, what I want everybody to take away today is that we are always a choice. The fact that you are here today reflects that you made a choice to be here. Now, it may have been an unconscious choice. There are some people who are just on autopilot and come every week. But I think for almost everybody here, you're here because you made a conscious decision to be here. And I just want to honor that decision and thank you for joining us. But be conscious in your choices. Be conscious of what you're choosing. Make choices that are in alignment with your values and your beliefs. choose to grow spiritually and choose a life of generosity. And so with this idea, this concept that we are at choice, I would invite my colleagues, the prayer practitioners, to join me in holding our congregation in love and light, and just simply knowing that that infinite presence, Vayu, is indeed within each and every one of us. That that infinite intelligence that is God is with us. Within each and every one of us is the very breath of life. It is the breath of God. And we know that the nature of God is one of love. And so as we live and go about our lives, we carry with us the very spark of God's love in every moment. And so as we interact with other human beings and we have situations and effects that appear to be less than harmonious, we have situations that appear to be conflicting, restricting, fear, we know that that's not truth. That's not capital T truth. Just like the sages, we know that within each and every one of us is the breath of God. And I speak my word now for those facing physical challenges, health challenges. We just simply know that this appearance of disease is only that, an appearance, that the capital T truth is that each and every one of us is perfect and whole and complete exactly as we are right here, right now. That within each of us is a blueprint that is perfect, a pattern of perfection. And it is that blueprint, that pattern that I embrace on behalf of anyone experiencing health concerns. And I also speak my word for those who are feeling lack and limitation, not enoughness. Just simply know that we live in a universe that is so great, so unbounded, we can't even imagine its grandeur. We cannot even imagine all of the good that is on the other side of the door of our lives. The only thing keeping us from all of our good is that door. And so on behalf of those people who are experiencing that lack, I open the door. I knock and I open the door and I welcome it in. Prosperity, abundance, safety and security, warmth. And so now I just give thanks. I give thanks for my awareness of the power and the presence of God expressing itself through and as and breathing Vayu each and every one of us. I give thanks. I let it go. I let it be. And so it is.